Hi there, this is Jim Ramsburg. In these days of 24/7 broadcast news coverage, it's hard to believe that newspapers once tried to virtually shut down broadcast news. Well, it really happened. Here's how, abridged from the 1933-34 chapter of Network Radio Ratings 1932 to 1953. It's a story of who, what, where, when, why, and how, beginning with a section titled, Newspapers Put the Screws to Radio News. Advertising was in a slump. Total ad spending in all media had plunged in 4 years 57% since 1929. Against that trend, network radio revenues had grown 64%. Newspapers were plainly frustrated. Even the 100 publishers who owned radio properties, the Chicago Tribune, the Detroit News, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and Louisville Courier-Journal, for example, were all stymied by radio's growing competition for local and national advertising dollars. Radio posed a second threat to newspapers more obvious to the public. Stations and networks alike had increased their daily schedules of up-to-the-minute news summaries. Foremost was Lowell Thomas's nightly newscast on the Blue Network. It had become dinnertime listening in several million homes, and radio repeatedly demonstrated its ability to scoop newspapers and breaking news, as evidenced by the ongoing Lindbergh baby kidnapping saga. The 1932 elections further underscored the new medium's advantage. The networks gave blanket coverage to the Roosevelt-Hoover returns as quickly as they were tallied from wire reports. Newspapers simply couldn't match radio's immediacy for reporting the news. But publishers figured they could cut off radio's supply of news. As early as their 1931 convention, members of the American Newspaper Publishers Association began to pressure the three major newswire services to refuse service to broadcasters. After radio's 1932 election coverage, that pressure exploded into a demand. The Associated Press, a newspaper cooperative, was the first to pull the plug on the networks in early 1933. Hearst's International News Service and Scripps Howard's United Press followed suit, but far more reluctantly, as Hearst already owned three radio stations, and Scripps Howard would soon buy its first. But the wire service embargo was complete by late spring 1933. CBS News chief Paul White and NBC's Abe Schlechter retaliated by building their own news departments at a rapid pace, busily recruiting stringers and developing sources. In September, CBS announced the formation of the Columbia News Service to compete with the wire services and support two daily 5-minute newscasts sponsored by General Mills. Operating without the flow of wire service material was a handicap. But network news continued to develop and newspapers continued to fume. But publishers felt they held a trump card. They had the potential to editorially challenge commercial broadcasting and their 1,800 newspapers and influence regulations governing radio under consideration in Washington, which became the Communications Act of 1934. Broadcasters, particularly the networks, feared that political power of the press and sought to appease the newspaper industry while they lobbied Congress for favorable legislation. Radio's willingness to pacify the press was on full display in December 1933, when newspaper and network-led broadcasting representatives signed the Biltmore Agreement, named for the hotel where they conferred in New York. The radio interests grit their teeth and signed the Biltmore Agreement, probably with their fingers crossed behind their backs. The pact created the Press Radio Bureau, its top billing reflective of its one-sided conditions. The Bureau was intended to become radio's single source for continuing news, providing summaries from the three wire services to its subscribers. But networks and stations were only permitted to broadcast the material twice a day, after 9:30 in the morning and after 9 o'clock at night, following the delivery of the morning and afternoon newspapers. More outrageously, those newscasts could not be sponsored. The networks and participating stations also agreed to discontinue building their own news departments, instead substituting occasional Press Radio Bureau audio bulletins, which always had to be tagged. Further details can be found in your local newspapers. broadcasters did receive several concessions. Newspapers agreed to continue publishing radio program schedules. Networks and stations were allowed to cover on-the-scene spot news, and familiar news voices could remain on the air as commentators and interpreters of the news. So the Lowell Thomas, Bo Carter, and Edwin C. Hill network newscasts were promptly labeled commentary. Newspaper boss publishers smugly declared a truce with broadcasters when the Press Radio Bureau went into operation on March 1, 1934. How long did the situation last? Well, that's reported in the next section of the 1933-34 chapter entitled A Wire-to-Wire Race. In quick response to the independent broadcasters unwilling to join the Press Radio Bureau flock, former United Press and CBS newsman Herb Moore gathered $150,000 from several wealthy station owners and launched an alternative news service, the Transradio Press. Transradio offered national and international news written for radio, plus shortwave audio bulletins of breaking news with no strings attached. Before long, independent Transradio was feeding copy for complete 5 and 15-minute newscasts to over 150 subscribing stations, more clients than the newspaper-controlled Press Radio Bureau. The parade was led by WOR in New York, WLS in Chicago, and KNX in Los Angeles. Witnessing Transradio's success and sensing a growing profit center in broadcasting, United Press and International News Service abandoned the Biltmore Agreement and resumed selling news to radio within a year. With the passage of the Communications Act of 1934, which was generally favorable to broadcasters, the newspaper's editorial and lobbying threats to radio evaporated. The Biltmore Agreement became totally impotent, and Press Radio Bureau withered away. Transradio, on the other hand, remained in business till 1951. More importantly, NBC and CBS were back in the news business. For them, 1933-34's delay in the development of radio news was just another bump in the road on their way to increased popularity and profit. And that's the story of the Press Radio Bureau, Transradio Press, and how newspapers once tried and failed to stifle broadcast news as a bridge from the pages of network radio ratings 1932 to 1953. And that's it for this visit on JimRamsburg.com. We hope you'll come back again. So till next time, this will be Jim here. Take care, and thanks for hearing there.